We're told that the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Max Planck, known for his theory of radiation, was infatuated with music. He was exposed to music in family settings and in the company of his very close friend, the violinist Joseph Joachim, and the string trios and quartets that Joachim and his students organized in Berlin with members in the Brahms and Schumann circles. Apparently, during his student days in Munich, Planck served the Academic Choral Society as second choir master and tenor soloist. According to an account in the Society's journal, music for Max Planck was not a matter of dilettantism or youthful antics. His contributions as a composer, singer, pianist, and organ player were highly valued, and they were expressions of one who was endowed with an unusual musical aptitude, absolute pitch, and considerable technical knowledge about music. For a period of 50 years, Planck became a part of the best that Berlin had to offer in music. His home on occasion became the locus for trios, Planck at the piano, Albert Einstein on the violin, and Planck's son Erwin on the cello. What is interesting for our purposes, though, perhaps only a fascinating footnote, is that during the years Max Planck was at the University of Munich, he decided to study harmony and composition with the organist, composer, and teacher Josef Rheinbecker, who was professor for composition and organ instruction at the newly founded Royal School of Music in Munich. It is evident that his students were exposed, as Planck was for 5 years, to a sound and comprehensive knowledge of counterpoint, fugue, and score reading. Rheinbecker had been trained in the music of Bach and the classical school of Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, and Schubert, and had used them as his model. Characteristic in Rheinbecker's music is his combination of song-like, often Gregorian-influenced melody that demonstrates absolute mastery of counterpoint and stylization. His works are distinguished by an attitude not structured on superficial effects, but on well-shaped lyrical features and an unmistakable striving toward tonal beauty. According to another of Rheinbecker's students, conductor Wilhelm Furtwängler, a naturalness in the shaping of voice leading was for Rheinbecker the supreme law in music making. All that from a study titled The Helmholtz Legacy by Erwin Hiebert. And this happens to have been the way Max Planck spoke about musical tuning or temperament. Of special interest is the moment when the natural interval emerges and the beats are totally lost. For me, this point of transition is a source of artistic pleasure. It is as if a certain last earthly residue had vanished while a veil is raised that opens up to the fantasy of an insight reaching a world of unending remoteness. And at his passing, Planck was remembered by his fellow physicists in this way. Planck was an artist no less than a man of science, and it is worth recalling that at one time a musical career was considered for him. In his work, there was something approaching a religious spirit. He decried skepticism and insisted on the need for faith on the part of the scientist. Professor Einstein once likened Planck to a devotee or lover whose inspiration rose from a hunger of the soul. That from the Times of London. Certainly there is no clear causal effect, but it is interesting to note that this was the milieu in which composer Josef Rheinbecker was living and working, the kinds of students he was teaching, a great physicist like Max Planck exploring the very nature of the universe. And someone like Princeton computer scientist Bernard Chazelle could observe, J.S. Bach didn't regard himself as an artist, but as a scientist, a cosmologist of music. That from Krista Tippett's On Being. Whether or not we can say anything at all specific about this cantata, The Star of Bethlehem by Josef Rheinbecker, it is intriguing to speculate, and perhaps the ultimate course is to hear the work for ourselves. We'll have a rare chance to experience this piece on December 11th at Marywood University in Scranton, under the direction of Dr. Rick Hoffenberg. Dr. Rick Hoffenberg, co-chair of the Music, Theater, and Dance Department at Marywood University in Scranton, paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk about this performance on December 11th at 4, and also about a performance that will be held this Sunday, December 4th, at the Marian Chapel with this ensemble.
What sometimes happens to me, I rarely set out with a particular theme in mind. More often, I have a few pieces in mind that I think, oh, this would be great for this year's Chamber Singers. And then if natural connections among the pieces develop in my mind, then I'll run with it. And that's sort of what happened this time around. There were a few settings that had as their central theme images in nature, be they roses or light or snow or other picturesque descriptions of the outdoors within Advent or Christmas settings. And so I thought, well, this is perfect. So much to do with that. So we're doing several settings that have to do with light. We're doing the Thomas Tallis Onata Lux, which is a piece we actually sang several years ago. I don't often repeat music, but I just thought it would be a wonderful way to start the concert. It's one of his most expressive settings, I find. He uses dissonance in ways that, you know, 500 years later are striking to our ears. When he brings together pitches, what we call a cross relation in music, he might use a D flat and D natural simultaneously. And it's the kind of thing where if you didn't know it was part of the style, you might look at it and say, is that a mistake? To modern ears, it can sound so wrong. But if it's in tune, exactly in tune, it can be incredibly expressive and beautiful. So I just love that piece in particular. And we're pairing that with a very new setting, the oldest and the newest settings on the program. Just 2 years ago, Eric Whitaker published a piece called Lux Nova, New Light. And it's actually a reworking of one of his most popular choral pieces called Lux Aurumque. And many choirs have done that piece. Eric wrote that, I believe in 2005, he transcribed Lux Aurumque for wind ensemble. And when he did that, he decided to replace a passage in the center of the piece with an excerpt from a song that he wrote called Bliss, that's from his musical Paradise Lost. So he took this excerpt from Bliss and he stuck it into Lux Aurumque when he was doing the transcription for Winds, and he loved the way it fit with the piece. And so in order to bring it full circle, he then did a choral retranscription of the wind version. And he called it, rather than Lux Aurumque 2 or revised or anything like that, he called it Lux Nova, slightly altered the text. And he says in the notes, he likes both. It's not that he considers Lux Nova an improvement, but personally, I love it. And it's a new twist on a piece that's among his most popular. So I wanted to include that. And two other pairings, I always enjoy doing multiple settings of the same text, especially when they are very contrasting. And that's certainly the case with two settings that we're doing of O Lux Beata Trinitas, which means O Light Blessed Trinity. The two settings, one is very meditative by a terrific musician who I had the pleasure of working with when I was freelancing in New York. He's a composer and pianist named James Bossy. And I remembered the premiere of this striking piece, but I couldn't find it among his published works. He's published by Oxford University Press. So I contacted him and he said, no, it was never published. It's, you know, it's very difficult. And each of soprano, alto, tenor, bass, each splits into like four parts. And it's, you know, it's a tough sell. And I said, well, I love it. Can I get the music anyway? So he sent me the music, and so we're lucky to be able to do it. And we actually performed that for the liturgy of the inauguration for our new president. We're coupling that with a piece that is so energetic as to be almost frenzied by the Japanese composer Komatsu Shita. And he wrote a setting of the same text in 2006, and it is just, from beginning to start, he uses mixed meter, and he treats the men and women rhythmically independently to create all sorts of exciting patterns and motives. And it's really a virtuosic trip through all sorts of different rhythmic and tonal worlds from beginning to end. It's really fun.
So is it like sparkling light in that sense?
It is, perhaps to the soprano's detriment, because they just have to hang up there at the top of their range. And, you know, it's the sort of thing where you have to approach it very carefully, because I don't want it to be unhealthy for them. So we have talked about how do you sustain something up there, which an instrumentalist can do. For a singer, you have to be very careful about what we call tessitura, which means where in the singer's range most of the piece lies. And in the case of the sopranos, they just hang up at the top of their range. So, you know, you gradually have to build up your endurance, is a bad word, but you have to build up your ability to sing it in one long stretch. And so we're working on that in a way that's open and healthy and hopefully tension-free.
And again, another lesson for students who will go on, we hope, to do more singing.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure some of these singers, I have so much talent in the group now, many of them applying their skills to be music therapists, to help people. Of course, we have some music education majors in there, and we have some non-music majors, which I always love. There's talent across the university, and I'm always happy to have auditions from students who are not majors.
As if that were not enough, are there more challenges?
Yes. So we're doing some of the other pieces by a couple of composers who were both born in 1959, James McMillan and Jonathan Dove, exact contemporaries, British composers. Both have been very successful. James McMillan has written large-scale works like his St. John Passion and many others. He is one of the rare composers who writes in many genres, but has also maintained choral music throughout. And so unlike somebody such as Lauritsen or Whitaker, who specializes specifically in choral music, he's a well-rounded composer who's included it. And we're doing one of his Strathclyde motets, which he wrote for the University of Strathclyde, which is in Scotland. And then we're doing a setting by Jonathan Dove called I Am the Day. Jonathan Dove, probably best known for his opera Flight. And we actually did an excerpt from Flight 2 years ago for the Marywood Opera Workshop. And so now some of the students who sang in that excerpt are in chamber singers doing one of his choral pieces. He's written 5 operas and a wealth of choral music and has been quite successful. We're doing a piece by Tchaikovsky called Legend. And we're lucky to have somebody in the group who speaks Russian and knows the native pronunciation. Her family is from Russia. And so she's helping us to try to sound as much like natives as possible. I'm not sure we'll succeed. We're very nervous about the fact that her mother will be in the audience. We're all afraid that our diction won't be up to par, but we're going to try our best. Legend is actually from a set of pieces that he wrote as children's songs. And then number 5 in that set was rewritten for a cappella chorus, and it's quite beautiful. Paul Mueller is a contemporary composer who gained worldwide fame in 2011 for his setting of Ubi Caritas, which was performed at the royal wedding of William and his bride, Kate Middleton. And we're actually going to do a piece of his called A Spotless Rose. We sang Ubi Caritas recently, and now we're going to do A Spotless Rose. Really a wonderful composer, writes so sensitively for the voice, beautiful sonorities, just a great composer. Later in the program, we're doing another pairing of settings of the same text, There Is No Rose of Such Virtue, a wonderful text for this time of year, and two composers, one by the name of Dr. Bonnie Miksch, who's at Portland State University, and a composer who was at Baylor for more than 30 years before he passed away at the age of 88, a composer by the name of Dr. Robert Young. The two of them both set this text, both terribly interesting and very different. Young's is simpler, leaner, closer to what people might know of that text. And Bonnie Miksch incorporates really intricate, interesting counterpoint with these beautiful soprano duets that open and close it in a really haunting way. And in addition to all that, we'll do some carols. We are closing the program with settings of two of the most popular carols, Jingle Bells and White Christmas, but they are really elevated to a new level by two gentlemen who were both music directors of Swingle Singers. So they are certainly steeped in sophisticated, complex, challenging arrangements of choral music. Their names are Jonathan Rathbone and Ben Perry. So we're going to do their arrangements of White Christmas and Jingle Bells, respectively. And I'll tell you, people who think Jingle Bells is simple, come hear this. This ain't so simple, but it's fun. We're having a lot of fun.
And do you present this beautiful music in the Marian Chapel?
We are. We're doing it in the Marian Chapel, which is at the Swartz Center at Marywood University. And for people who haven't been there, it's just a stunningly beautiful, small space with these octagonal stained glass windows at the back. It's really beautiful. I love performing there.
And there are more reasons for us to come to Marywood to hear great music.
I am really excited to present on December 11th with our larger choir, which has always been called the Marywood Campus Choir. I actually renamed it this year the Marywood Concert Choir. It's the same choir, but just a confession, only between you and me, Erica. I actually have wanted to change the name for years because I'm very happy with the fact that our choir includes not just students and faculty from the campus, but community members. They're an integral part of the choir. And so rather than calling it Campus Choir, I wanted the name Concert Choir to encompass everybody in the ensemble. So that choir will actually be combining with the Marywood University Orchestra on December 11th, and we're going to present two settings of the story of the birth of Jesus. One of them is performed occasionally, and one of them, much to my astonishment, is virtually never performed. The rarer of the two is a piece by Rheinberger called The Star of Bethlehem. And Rheinberger, I think, is one of those composers who is simply not given the attention and respect he deserves. He was born somewhat, I think, into the shadow of Brahms. He was born 6 years after Brahms. And so I think although he excelled in a variety of genres, orchestra music, operas, chamber music, and a lot of it is really quite wonderful, very beautiful, I just don't think he's ever gotten the respect that he deserves, in my opinion. And, you know, there aren't very many really high-quality Christmas pieces for chorus and orchestra. There just aren't as many as I wish there were. So choral directors tend to come back to the same titles over and over again, and those are great pieces. But Star of Bethlehem is wonderful. It's this 40-minute piece, 9 scenes or short movements for chorus, 2 soloists, soprano and baritone soloists, and orchestra and organ. And it's beautifully written. It's a wonderful setting of a text by Rheinberger's wife, actually, a woman by the name of Fanny, who was a noted painter and poet, quite a cultured woman in her own right, And he actually, Reinberg actually set many of her texts for his choral works, for his songs. And the way he uses both the chorus and the orchestra through these 9 movements, it's a wonderful musical journey, and I'm so excited for the audience to hear it. It was written in German. Reinberger spent most of his life in Munich, although we will actually be performing it in English. I want the audience to be able to understand the text, and frankly, part of that was a pragmatic decision as well. The other piece, which I'll talk about in a minute, is in Italian, and we're doing that in the native Italian. So rather than overwhelm them with some Italian and a whole lot of German, I thought, let's do a piece in English and a piece in Italian. And I think that's more audience friendly as well. But Reinberger was just, I have to gush about him for a minute. He was a prodigy of the highest order. I think by the age of 7, he was already an organist skilled enough to be playing church services. I mean, can you imagine going to a church and the regular church organist, the little 7-year-old, was at first or second grade? And by that time, he had already composed a mass. It's really amazing. And then at the age of 12, he moved to Munich for further study. And at 20, he was already on the faculty of the Munich Conservatory and became a full professor before the age of 30 and remained a professor his whole life there. He also, in addition to being a fine composer, was lauded by many people as the greatest teacher of composition in Germany. I brought one quote, and I brought it with me because I think it speaks volumes about what an amazing teacher he must have been. Hans von Bülow, who we know was not an easy person to please, he called Reinberger, and this is a quote, a truly ideal teacher of composition, unrivaled in the whole of Germany. Remember, this was a time when Brahms and Schumann, other wonderful musicians, had lived and died. And beyond in skill, refinement, and devotion to his subject, in short, one of the worthiest musicians and human beings in the world. So that's quite a statement from a very notoriously harsh critic. So, in any case, suffice it to say I'm a fan, not only of this piece, but of Reinberger in general, and maybe I'll convert a few people in the audience.
Now, do the soloists represent characters, or are they just telling the story as narrators?
Well, it's a good question. The soprano is marked in the score sometimes as soprano soloist and sometimes as the angel. So she does double as that character. I'm really thrilled to have Eileen Hanisch, who is a wonderful local soprano who I'm sure many people know, also a voice teacher at Marywood. I'm thrilled to have her as the soprano soloist. We've worked together on a number of pieces. She did the soprano solos in the Poulenc Gloria when we did that, Brahms Requiem. She's just terrific. And the baritone soloist in the piece will be sung by George Lewandowski, who is a former student at Marywood and has developed into a fine singer and is getting a lot of solo work in this area, deservedly so. I should add, we'll also have some student soloists. There is a movement for 3 solo men, and so we will have members of the choir who will take a solo turn there as well.
All right, you teased the piece that's going to be delivered in Italian. Tell us what it is.
Right, so this is the piece Laud to the Nativity by Ottorino Respighi. And this does get performed occasionally. Unlike the Reinberger, which I literally only know about one performance of the Reinberger, and I'm sure there have been others, but I looked online and I found that in 2007, it was performed in Evanston, Illinois, which is near where I grew up, so that was interesting to me, but really hard to find performances. The Respighi does get performed occasionally, but probably not as often as it deserves. Most people, of course, will know Respighi for his orchestra works, particularly Pines of Rome. And if that's all people know about Respighi, this will be a revelation. He wrote it after most of his big romantic orchestra works. He wrote it in 1930, and it's very much pared down compared to those pieces. The instrumentation is just flutes, an oboe and English horn, two bassoons, piano four hands, and triangle. No strings, no brass, no organ. And it creates a very specific sound that he obviously wanted. He knew exactly what he was doing. And one of the sort of aural images, if you'll forgive that phrase, is a sort of pastoral sound. And it's partly because when you have the double reeds so prominent, oboe, English horn, and bassoons, it does create this kind of this sound that harkens back to images that people might have of earlier music. And actually, Respighi plays upon that. He admired Renaissance and medieval music, and he makes allusions, musical allusions to that music. And we should bear in mind that this was a time, 1930, this was around a time when composers were exploring neoclassical and neo-Baroque music. Stravinsky wrote Symphony of Psalms in I believe, 1930, around the same time. And there were also neo-Baroque pieces around that time as well. So this was a time when several composers, prominent composers, were doing this sort of thing. And I think Respighi had his own sort of, I don't know if it's a neoclassical phase, more maybe neo-Baroque and neo-Renaissance, but certainly very much scaled back from these huge orchestral pieces, which I must say I love, but they're sometimes criticized for being too much like Hollywood and, you know, too overtly expressive. And of course, the ironic part about that is that Respighi was the precursor to all of that big Hollywood writing in the 30s and 40s, not the other way around. So when people criticize Respighi for being too Hollywood, he's the one who influenced them, not the reverse. But in any case, this piece is really a far cry from all of that, what's sometimes considered excess. Although, as I say, I love that music too.
What about the text? What's the source of the text?
Right, so it's a 13th century text by a Franciscan friar, somebody by the name of Todi. And he actually had a lot of admirers who lived subsequently. Dante was somebody who really admired his writings. And he wrote a number of lauds, a number of texts in praise of various sacred ideals. And so Respighi takes that laud. Of course, that's what gives us the title, Laud to the Nativity. And in this case, it is a retelling of the birth of Jesus Christ. And in this case, there are three soloists, and they do play specific roles. The soprano soloist is the angel, like the Rheinberger, actually. The mezzo-soprano soloist is the Virgin Mary. And there's a tenor soloist, and he plays the part of a shepherd, along with, in an extensive middle section of the piece, the men of the chorus in four-part harmony, often a cappella, sing underneath him as shepherds. So he's sort of the lead shepherd. And I want to be sure to mention, I'm so thrilled with the soloists who we have. The part of the angel, which is a high soprano solo, really difficult. These long phrases. It's somebody who has to be able to float up to a high C. Fortunately, we have on faculty somebody who can do this exquisitely, and that's Jennifer Kogel. So she will be singing that role. The mezzo-soprano part, a dear friend of mine and somebody who's known and beloved in this area, Ellen Rutkowski. She has sung the role before and was excited to get back to it, and I'm certainly excited to have her do it. That's also a difficult part. Wide range up to high A flat, which is high for mezzo-soprano, down low, everything in between. And the high tenor role, which is certainly difficult for other reasons, Wes Poole, a wonderful tenor who I first met when I moved to Scranton in 2007, and I wanted to work with him, and then Wes actually moved away in 2008. He came back to the area recently, and I was so thrilled that he joined the choir. I just can't tell you how much of a blessing it is to have him in the choir, and it's also a blessing. I'm also thrilled to have him on the voice faculty at Marywood. He's a fine teacher in addition to being a wonderful tenor, so are we ever lucky to have the three of them as soloists.
Dr. Rick Hoffenberg, co-chair of the Department of Music, Theater, and Dance, and associate professor of choral conducting at Marywood University in Scranton, speaking with us about two upcoming holiday concerts. The university's Chamber Singers Concert will take place this Sunday, December 4th, at 2 in the afternoon in the Marian Chapel in the Swartz Center for Spiritual Life, and that performance is free and open to the public. And then, as we just heard, the Marywood Concert Choir and Orchestra will present its concert Sunday, December 11th at 4 at the Seth LaVerghetta Center for the Performing Arts, including this work, Laud to the Nativity by Ottorino Respighi, and The Star of Bethlehem, a Christmas cantata by Josef Rheinberger, and that performance is free and open to the public. For more information, on the web, marywood.edu, marywood.edu. Marywood is proud to announce that the university's Chamber Singers have been named semifinalists in the Collegiate Division of the American Prize 2016 in Choral Music, a nationwide performing arts competition, and you can hear them in an exquisite program for the holiday this Sunday, December 4th at 2 in the afternoon in the Marian Chapel in the Swartz Center on the campus in Scranton. And then on December 11th, a Sunday, that's at 4, the Marywood Concert Choir and Orchestra with The Star of Bethlehem by Josef Rheinberger and Laud to the Nativity by Ottorino Respighi. For more information, on the web, marywood.edu, marywood.edu.